Welcome to Minute 92 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Eric Nash of The Almost Famous Minute and Feels Like Weezer. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Hey, glad to be back.
Yeah, we had a great conversation yesterday, and let's continue and see where things go. Episode 92 begins with us getting a shot of the compound at night, where we see a figure moving around in the darkness, and goes all the way till we get to see a bag passed to the sixth man. So one of the things that is great is the way that these minutes were split up. It really split things up perfectly here. Because of the way that we get the dark screen right here. Now, I don't know when you first saw this movie. I first saw it on VHS back in the mid-80s. This is actually the exact point where they split up the two videos, which it works perfectly. You know, if they were to have an intermission in this movie, this is the spot where you would do it. You know, especially based on what we were discussing yesterday about the fact that this is Hiltz's his turning point throughout the movie. So this is the perfect spot for it. And the fact that Sturgis gives us a completely black screen helps give that feeling.
For a few seconds.
Yes. Yeah. Longer than any of the others. I guess when you're watching it minute by minute, so it's quite long. You know, just getting the darkness of it all. So the darkness starts, and like I said, I think we have almost 10 seconds of darkness. That's amazing. I think it's like 9.5 seconds or something like that. Then we get to see the compound at night. We see a guard moving around the fence. We see the guard towers. And then we see a dark figure doing some interesting acrobatics.
Yeah.
You know, Steve McQueen, I guess, was, besides being an actor and a motorcycle rider, was also an acrobat. It's quite humorous looking at the way that he's jumping over the wire. And, you know, it looks like something that maybe Saturday Night Live would do, you know, by showing, you know, a very inept burglar, you know, jumping around doing somersaults and, you know, different type of aerobatic maneuvers. So it's pretty funny watching him do this. And then he basically crouches down to the ground, does a roll, and hits the fence, actually. Which, you know, if you're trying to be as stealth as possible, you probably don't want the fence moving. Or you want it to be moving as little as possible.
Yeah, he definitely puts his hand up to try to steady it, to get it back into a submissive, non-swaying, non-jingling state.
Yeah, but that goes back to what we were saying yesterday. Yeah. You know, when you have barbed wire, you don't necessarily want to grab it.
Yeah.
Even if you're trying to steady it. It's probably not the best idea to do that. But hey, it's Steve McQueen. You know, later on in the movie, we get to see him play with barbed wire again. So I guess he's trying to get himself used to it for later. Then he looks around, and then he flips around. It's just very comical the way this whole thing happens. And then he somehow pulls out a pair of wire cutters and begins to start clipping through the barbed wire. I guess it's always handy to be able to have a pair of wire cutters with you.
Well, at least if you're an escape artist of some sort, you know, whether it's actual prisons or if you're like Houdini or something, then that could be the secret clue as to why he got away with some of the things he did.
It could be. It could very well be. I mean, it's interesting to think about that. I mean, that's probably one of the best commodities that any of the prisoners need to have. A lot of them just pull out wire cutters. I mean, McQueen, this isn't even the first time he's got wire cutters. You know, even on the first day, he's got a pair of wire cutters that he claims to have in order to try to cut through the wire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess a flyer must always have wire cutters on it. Who knows? Doesn't really know. We'll never know, will we? He cuts through these various parts of the wire now, and then we get another shot, and the next shot is in daylight with supposedly the same wire, but it's at a slightly different angle, so it's hard to tell if it's actually the same spots that were cut or not. Did you happen to take a look at that?
I mean, you know, and it's definitely not the same camera spot. I mean, there's a really, you know, a pretty quick fade actually, but you know, with doing this minute by minute and you know so forth and second by second even, essentially it's the buildings behind the, you know, they're changing position a good bit, so it seems likely that some little tomfoolery kind of happened here. Something a little bit changed.
Yeah.
In some way, it seems like.
Which theoretically shouldn't happen when you're making a movie like this, because, obviously I know that you know, they don't film anything in... They usually don't film movies in chronological order or anything like that. But if you have a scene where someone's cutting through wires and then you're going to show it in daylight right afterwards, it would make sense to film it, you know, one day after the other and just use what he already cut yesterday.
Yep.
So, I mean, it is possible that it's exactly the same cut, but it just doesn't look that way. I mean, the 109, the number on the barracks right behind is more centered during the daylight than it is during the nighttime. In the nighttime, it's a little bit off-center. Yeah, no, it's hard to tell if these are the exact spots that he cut or not. But like I said, it would be very strange if it wasn't. You know, and also they move the camera. Just keep the camera in the same spot. I think here they're trying to frame things differently. Maybe that's why. Because in the scene at night, they're just showing Queen. But here you have Von Luger on one side, Strachwitz on the other side. You have one of the guards, I think his name is Kramer, standing in the middle, followed by a number of other guards standing by with machine guns. So it's actually framed very well, the way that if you look at it, you see that, you know, that you have the two German officers bookending, and the area that's cut out is nicely done in between the two of them where they're standing.
Yeah, and I almost wonder, like, I mean, who the cinematographer was here?
Daniel Pfaff. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's multiple, you know, a lot of people probably don't know this, but the idea of multiple units, you know. I mean, even though that cinematographer probably should have been kind of overseeing everything, kind of having the game plan, you know, along with the director. But, you know, it could easily be two different units that even filmed those two scenes. So,
yeah, it's very possible. Because you have different actors also. Here you have the all the Germans, and the previous one had just the lone American trying to get out. I just think it's nicely done, especially for people looking at this and not minute by minute. No one's going to notice this.
Oh boy, yeah.
You know, you have someone cutting the wire. Next second, you see the wire cut. That's it. You know, you take it for granted that they're doing it properly. Again, not that we're trying to deride them for what they did. You know, they all made a great movie. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same. I guess it's the same thing with the way that you know, Alex and Pete do their work. They love Star Wars, but they still make fun of the various strange things that happen along the way.
Yeah,
which I guess is why we all love doing the movies by minute.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of them are just looking around and. It's really funny that Von Luger is just, he's looking up. Like, what is he looking at?
Yeah.
Hilt's cut low on the fence. He didn't cut up high. So is he looking maybe at one of the guard posts, wondering why the guard didn't notice? Is he like, I think I'm putting Schultz on report. Who knows? And one of the things that I love about this movie is that there's so many extras walking around in the background throughout many of the scenes in the compound. So here you have a group of extras that are walking by, and they're actually looking right at the camera. So the question always remains, you know, are they looking and saying, "Ooh, they're making a movie here"? I mean, obviously they're in a secluded place, so they've been hired to be there. But are they saying, "Ooh, there's the camera," or are they saying, "Ooh, look, there's a hole in the fence"? You know what?
Yeah. you would hope the director and any other like assistants or what have you might have said, hey, extras.
Exactly.
You know, it's fine to look towards the camera essentially because, you know, hey, you could be looking at what the guards were kind of looking, must have been looking at right before the cut essentially. Or the not the guards, the officers.
Right.
This hole.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I actually heard, I think it was again on the commentary when I listened to it last week, that a majority of the extras were students studying in German, foreign students studying in Germany, mm-hmm. because then they didn't have to worry about communicating with them in different languages. They could speak to them in English and tell them, okay, you walk from here to there and don't look at the camera. And they still do. Who knows? You know, Strachlis also looks around just like von Luger. It's a very funny scene because it's not a very long scene, just showing them. In some ways, they look like Keystone Cops with the way that this scene is set up because, you know, there's no verbal language at all. They're just looking back and forth. You know, the director or the cinematographer or whoever was there at the time said, okay, look to the right, look to the left. Now you look to the right, you look to the left. And that's it. That's the whole little scene of what they're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a shot of Danny digging in the tunnel, which this is one of the first times that we see the way that they're actually digging the tunnel. You know, we've heard a lot about it. We've seen little bits and pieces of it beforehand. But this, I think, the first time where you actually see a character in the tunnel digging. Did you remember that differently than I do?
Well, yeah. I mean, I couldn't have recalled that from when I did that recent rewatch. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's very Boyhood for me, especially being somewhat artistic. I think being something of a drawer, and I would love to theorize and fantasize about inside things, whether it's underground or in trees. I remember another thing that I would do, but just imagine animals or soldiers and different things, different types of things, making their way through tunnels of different sorts and different types of things, whether it's underground or, like I said, in trees. But you know, and the crazy thing here is also there is this, you know, in watching it, the minute by minute format, I did have to back up quite a few times. You know, there is this, the dirt falls on his head.
Yes.
So watching what's above that, you know, where that's coming from. I mean, that's not like a hole that appeared because the dirt fell.
Right.
It's a hole that was already there.
Yes.
So maybe there was a rock there and they already extricated the rock.
There's someone on the top side sprinkling dirt down.
it's no mechanism or anything, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to give Charles Bronson credit for being willing to do that. Not that he had a choice.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get your paycheck, you got to do what the surgeon tells you to do. Now, I love one of the things I love about this movie is the attention to detail. Now,
mm-hmm.
okay, you can see on the right hand side, you can see the makeshift lamp that they have there, which in the original book, they mentioned the fact that they use melted margarine with wicks in order to keep these fires lit throughout the entire tunnel. But if you look below that, you see like a little piece of piping.
Yep.
What do you think that's for?
My bigger concern is, you know, there's a hard cut to where this other piece of piping and tube, maybe, I'm thinking,
mm-hmm.
you know, goes from being right behind Danny's head to, you know, in some minutes or something later, some short time period, probably, where Danny has since extricated himself back out and taken a break, maybe, and the other guys come in you know, but either one of them put this other pipe or you know, a little piece of ductwork is more my line of thinking, and with this tube in it, in the hole essentially that Danny was digging. And to do what? I don't quite have a take on what that could be there for, but I mean, it's some part of the process, I guess. But yeah, I mean, this other piece, it kind of does shift just a little bit. You know, it's you know, they've moved it a little bit, but it's actually very much in the same orientation, but just shifted it a little bit where it is there at the end of this, at the current end of the tunnel.
Right.
This now, extra little piece, yeah, is odd.
My theory of it is that this is actually what they use to create the lamps. So he has to have that with him so that when they get in further, he can create, he can light up another lamp.
Wow.
Because that's what it looks like. It looks like it's something that really...
Yeah, it looks like, yeah, it's the same type of, you know, same diameter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, it just must be supplies to be able to light up another lamp as they're going, or light up numerous lamps as they go along, which shows the ingenuity of the whole thing, that they're going to actually have these with them as they're, you know, moving along, as opposed to, you know, not really caring about it and not having to make people wonder what they're doing. You know, I just think there are a lot of times in this movie where there'll be things just sitting on the side, which you can try and figure out what their later use will be. And this is a perfect example of that, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you also get to see when Danny picks up his head, you can see the tin can right behind him, that they use that as a shovel, you know, as a makeshift shovel to pick up the sand. You know, here he's using a pickaxe. Okay. He's using a pickaxe to break through the sand and dirt, you know, to make it softer. But in order to put the dirt inside the bags and things like that, so they needed to use this makeshift shovel, which was made out of a tin can.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we see that Danny starts to continue breaking through the dirt, and then we hear a creaking sound. Is an avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
That starts coming down, you know, we see all this dirt that starts, you know, making a little bit of noise, which, you know, it's the type of thing that you would see in movie where you see movies where there is an avalanche, they first hear a crack that sounds like a crack of thunder before something comes down. I mean, they're telling us that something is about to happen. It doesn't happen in this minute, so we don't know exactly what it's going to be, but it just sounds, you know, he's got a little few pieces of dirt that fall on him. Then we get to see Willie, who's, you know, he's got all these different bags of dirt next to him, and he basically he's in the same position of where it looks as if he's in the same place where Danny just was, and he has all these bags filled with dirt that essentially he used, you know, potted can or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's a can that has a handle on it so that he could use it as a shovel. Because you know, towards the end of this minute, you get a better shot of it when it's next to Willie's head here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you get to see the, you know, the piping that we were talking about earlier also. And then you get to see all these bags of dirt. And then can you imagine lying on your back, having to pass across your entire, the length of your body, a bag of dirt to somebody? Who passes it on to the next person, to the next person? I mean, there are six people that this bag goes through in this minute.
Yeah, okay, well. Well, yeah, I mean, and their heads are on each other's knees, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even the full normal height of a guy.
Correct.
And, 6 feet, but yeah.
It doesn't look comfortable.
A little bit less, but yeah, still. Well, and I've been down. I've had occasion where I've needed to go down in at least what's here in America, crawl spaces.
Yes.
You know, below houses and some houses that we where it's not a simple foundation on, you know, on grade, slab on grade.
Are you digging a tunnel?
Nor is it a full basement, full height basement. You know?
Are you digging a tunnel in your house?
No. Yeah, and actually not even this house, but in one house my parents and I had when I was a kid, when I was a teen, you know, early teen, teenager, and my dad had me help him, and he went down first, but had me go down with him and figure some things out, get some things, you know, situated with, like, wiring and so forth. But then even more recent than that, a job I had for the past 20 years, and just very recently in the last year or so, I had occasion on a time or two to have to go down and scope out what's going on with the plumbing underneath a commercial building in a crawl space there. But yeah, it's there's been occasion where I've done that, and it's tough. But if you're not too claustrophobic, which I found at one point I was a little bit, but that was actually in the roof, in an attic, when I felt like I couldn't get out at one point, you know, or I was gonna get myself to a spot where I couldn't get out.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's.
Well, I think we can be somewhat thankful that the way that they filmed this movie, they didn't do it the way that the real prisoners dug, because they couldn't get their clothes dirty, they would actually all be completely naked. So we can be quite grateful that we don't get to see that here. I think that would have taken away from what they're trying to show here.
So then up above, before they exit the building, they would get redressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they would have to clean would be their like hands and head, right?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Exactly.
A lot less cleaning would have to be done.
Right. I mean, in the escape itself, which, you know, we're still a few weeks away from discussing, they did the same thing. In the real life escape, they didn't go through the tunnel in their, you know, pristine tailored clothes because they didn't want to have to be walking around with dirt on it.
Well, that's similar to Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But there they were able, it was just one guy. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You'd think that there would be an easier way of passing this dirt along than the way that they did it here.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen in later minutes of the movie about the trolley. I guess they're not at the point where they've built the trolley yet. You know, Harry just doesn't have a trolley yet. Maybe that trolley was just in town.
Yeah, you have to do this work to a point at least to get to where you can have a trolley. So, yeah.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Okay. Mm. All right. Well, you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No. I think that's good for me.
All right. Excellent. So why don't you once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Like I said last time, Lucky Mustard is a way you could find me at plenty of places all across the internet. But otherwise, as you said at the beginning, my name is Eric Jack, or Eric. I often go by my middle name too, Eric Jack Nash. I'm out there, and hopefully, if you like this, you can find the Almost Famous Minute, and then the other Movie by Minute I did prior was Watchmen Minute. So you should be able to get those on your podcatchers still.
Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can contact us. You can go to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. Our Facebook group is The Cooler, and our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So until tomorrow. Tally-ho!
Tally-ho!